the First Amendment.
Broadband style.
Now stand by.
TalkZone.com.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
Shotgun snap. Rivers over the middle. Gates has got it with a one-hand catch. Into the end zone. Touchdown, San Diego.
That takes the snap. He's back. He pumps. He looks. He pumps. He runs. He is firing. And it's up for a touchdown. Backing in is the Sean Jackson. 35 yards.
Patriots twist up front. Breeze going to throw down the safe. Wide open. Jeffrey Henderson. Nobody's within 20 yards of him. He could do the backstroke into the end zone from there. And he'll take it in for a 75-yard touchdown strike.
This is Wayne Larrabee with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush, and the Pro Football Weekly staff. Welcome to an in-depth look at professional football. Coming up, we've got some big divisional clashes with playoff implications all around.
And what are the futures for Gary Kubiak in Houston, Wade Phillips in Dallas, and Reggie Bush in New Orleans?
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air!
Along with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush, this is Wayne Larrabee. The Way We Hear It features news and information gathered by the editors and reporters of Pro Football Weekly. It's week 13, and we begin the month of December with senior editor Mike Wilkening. And Mike, down in Texas, down in Houston to be specific, they still can't beat the Colts. The Texans just can't get by the Colts. Gary Kubiak's club falls to 5-6, and now Bob McNair is contemplating whether to at least reassess and maybe even fire him?
Well, he's at least kind of addressed Kubiak's future. He talked to the Houston Chronicle this week and talked about the situation as it stands. And really, it kind of comes down to how the Texans finish this season. If they finish strongly, certainly Kubiak, I think, has done enough to merit another season. If they completely collapse, I would think that it would be a point, I think, at that point for Bob McNair to sort of reevaluate what's going on. But clearly, this is a team that they have not been able to get past the Colts. They have struggled in the division this season. They split with the Titans, lost the Colts twice, lost kind of a heartbreaker to the Jaguars here earlier in the season. This Sunday's game, I think, is pivotal for them because they lose their 5-7, and they have one win in the division, and they're probably in trouble. But if they win, you can kind of reshape where you're going at that point. You're at 500, schedule's sort of favorable. They might have a shot.
Well, forgetting this week, though, Mike, the real interesting piece, looking at the last 5 weeks, this is a team the last couple of years that started slow, got hot down the stretch to get to 8-8. This year, they get to 5-3. Now they've lost three straight. If they were to finish 3-2 the rest of the way, which isn't bad, that's still just 8-8, and you got a feeling listening to McNair that that may not be good enough this time.
Yeah, that's the big question. What do they do if they're in a situation like that? Because they've given the impression of being a team that's been on the cusp for a long time. Their window certainly is open, I think, to go to the playoffs. You know, Matt Schaub is improving. Defensively, they're a lot better than they've been. There's a lot of positives here, but if they're in that 8-8, 7-9 area, that's where I think it becomes a tough decision because there's been progress, but there haven't been that postseason bit yet. And this is a team that they've been in existence since 2002. They really haven't been close to the postseason. I think you've got to kind of wonder, you know, when they take that next step.
Well, you know, and also if they go 8-8 this year, guys, wouldn't that be 3 years in a row at 8-8? Well, that's a plateau.
That's my point. I don't see how he survives at 8-8.
Thank you very much, Mike. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week. Senior editor Eric Edholm is with us. Jerry Jones has been reticent on the subject of Wade Phillips, Bum Phillips too for that matter, but Wade Phillips in particular, his status in the future of the Cowboys. They're entering the perilous for them month of December where their seasons over the last several years have collapsed in the month of December. What's the status of this situation? What did Jerry say this week?
Yeah, I can tell you that 8-8 isn't going to do it for the Cowboys because they're sitting at 8-3 right now. But it has been interesting, Wayne, this week because, you know, back in early November, second week of the month, Jerry Jones did not want to address the future of Wade Phillips. This is the final year of his deal. He's heading into an option year. The team has not picked up that option yet. And as you pointed out, December September has been the month of the blues for the Cowboys. Now, it's been for a variety of different reasons over the years, but they are heading into the toughest part of their schedule. They've got they go to the Giants this weekend. They've got San Diego, at New Orleans, at Washington, then home against Philadelphia. Remember how the season ended against the Eagles last year. So, you know, he did sort of say, look, I mean, if we get a home playoff game, if we win the division, these are things that are going to work in Wade Phillips' future. And this is going to help him. So he kind of did sort of dangle the carrot a little bit out in front of him.
You know, Eric, it's our job in the media to write the lines, not read between them. But yeah. Unlike the Bob McNair comments, I listened to the Jones comments, and he sounds to me like a guy who's already setting the stage for Mike Shanahan, whoever it is he's going to chase.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. You know, you can't rule that stuff out, given that Jerry Jones is always trying to hit the home run. He thought he made the quote-unquote right decision when he hired Wade Phillips. And we'll see. I think this year, you know, do they have the possibility of going 11-5, winning the division, of hosting a home playoff game at the new stadium? Yeah, they do. Is that going to be enough to keep Wade Phillips? We'll have to see.
Well, let me ask you this. What about Jason Garrett? Where is his status in this whole thing?
It's a very good question, Wayne, because, you know, I mean, we're talking about a guy that was the rock star coach, had his choice of job offers, Atlanta, Baltimore, turned them down with the idea that he might be Wade's successor one day. Those plans have to be on hold now. He's been questioned roundly throughout the season. His play calling, divvying up the run, not enough at times, too much at others. So, you know, I would say his status is even more in limbo than Wade Phillips.
Senior editor Eric Edholm, thank you very much, Eric. Associate editor Michael Blunda with us. Michael, let's go to Buffalo now. There was a lot of talk that they want to talk with Bill Cowher, that they sat down with Mike Shanahan. They've got a head coaching opening, but what are they going to do about the GM's job?
Yeah, the Bills did meet with Mike Shanahan last week, reportedly for 7 hours, to talk about the head coaching job and possibly other things too. But people close to the team feel that the right move for the Bills would be to first hire a GM, then let that person go out and hire their own head coach instead of doing it the other way around, which would seem to be a little bit counterproductive.
Well, Michael, Russ Brandon is the president of football operations. He did play some ball in college, but he's viewed more as a business guy. And I think what they're really saying is not that Brandon's in trouble, but they need a football guy to come in and oversee the football operation and then get a coach that he can work with.
Right, that's correct. It's not like Russ Brandon is going to lose his job. He'll still stay with the organization. He'll just be in a different capacity. You know, he's done a good job with them from a marketing standpoint. Some of his football decisions haven't really been the best. So they just want to go get an experienced football mind, a guy who's had success running an organization, bring him in and let him make the football decisions.
Thank you very much, Michael. Stay tuned. We've got more Way We Hear It. It's week 13 in the NFL, and you're listening to Pro Football Weekly. You are listening to Pro Football Weekly, featuring the publisher and editor, Hub Arkush, and the Pro Football Weekly staff. Associate editor Dan Parr joins us, and let's start at Carolina, Dan, one of your teams. Jake Delhomme will not start this week for the first time since 2007. He has been through a brutal 11-game stretch. We wonder what his status is down there going forward, and also what about the head coach, John Fox? Is he under fire as well?
Well, both are obviously under fire. It's been a very disappointing season, Wayne, for the Panthers, coming in 4-7 now. Jake Delhomme's future is very much linked to John Fox's. Delhomme's not going anywhere. He signed through 2014 after signing that contract extension last offseason. He's going to be back no matter what. The Panthers are on the hook for just too much money to cut him loose and eat that much money. So the question is he going to be a starter next year or not? If John Fox is back as head coach, which right now the indication is he's going to be, then we'll probably might see Jake Delhomme in a competition with someone else for that starting job, or maybe Delhomme will be the guy. John Fox has really never turned his back on Jake as long as he's been healthy in Carolina. But if there's a new head coach in town, you would have to imagine that Delhomme will be either facing a challenge from someone else who's brought in through free agency or the draft, or possibly replaced with a new guy automatically as training camp opens.
Dan, John Fox is a hell of a football coach. I don't think there's any question about that. He's been to a Super Bowl, couldn't quite get it won. But he's also been remarkably inconsistent with that ball club, and there's been some really bad years wrapped around the good years. What is it? Or do you have any insight as to why he seems to be so bulletproof with Jerry Richardson?
Like you said right off the bat, they know he's a good football coach. I think that's really what it comes down to. Jerry has been pretty loyal to him. Jerry's been also very loyal to Jake Delhomme. He did, of course, shake up the front office early in the season. He didn't fire both his sons, but they were let go. And it seemed like the word from his father was that it was time for them to go. So the question is, was that an indication of sign of things to come? Are they going to be, is he willing to shake things up again? Or is there a different relationship between, you know, him and John Fox and GM Marty Herney, and John Fox is signed for another year? He might decide to stick with him one more time.
Let's go to another one of your teams, Dan Parr, and that would be New Orleans. Down in New Orleans, they thrashed the Patriots without Reggie Bush once again. And Bush has been in and out of the lineup at times through his career due to injuries. He's got a bad knee. What's the status of him in the future, and is there a big payment that might force them to cut him?
There is a big payment that there's, you know, been a lot of speculation that that will be what ends up causing them to break their ties with Reggie Bush here in the offseason, an $8 million cap hit coming up. But the question is, are they going to be willing to just go ahead and let Reggie Bush go with no compensation? Will they at least look for a team that might be interested in giving up a draft pick? Now, the thing is, there's probably not going to be many interested parties. Reggie Bush, the big problem with him has been a lack of durability. He hasn't lived up to the billing when he came out of the draft. The Saints still value him as a weapon, as a target. He still is a important piece of that offense, but as you mentioned, they've been fine without him. So they don't feel like this is a guy they have to have. It's a nice luxury to have, but not for the price. So they're going to want to renegotiate that deal with him. If he's not willing to do that, you might have to look at a trade or possibly being released. But I think that's a last option at this point.
You know, at some point, Saints fans and NFL fans have to come to terms with the fact that Reggie Bush has never been worthy of the second pick overall in the NFL draft, which is what was used on him. And that's both because of injuries and because of production. And while he's a nice asset, he can be a nice weapon. As you said, Dan, he's a nice to have, but he's not exactly a guy you can build an offense around.
Absolutely. He's not an essential piece of that offense right now. They have Pierre Thomas and Mike Bell in the backfield. It's been a very nice 1-2 punch. The running game has been better than ever with those guys leading the way. And Reggie Bush has been a decoy option, a guy who has kind of disappeared in some games. He has chipped in, and I think he's got 5 touchdowns at this point. I mean, he has provided some spark for them, but he's not at all the big piece that everybody thought. He's a role player right now.
Right, and whether there's a salary cap or not next year, you got to figure the Saints aren't going to want to put $8 million into a role player right now. That's a given. Thank you very much, Dan. We appreciate it. Executive editor Dan Arkish is with us. Dan, big news up in the Pacific Northwest. Pro Football Weekly basically broke the story last Sunday night. Seahawks general manager Tim Ruskell leaving the organization. Can you give us some details?
Well, they had a press conference on Thursday, Wayne, and it appears that for the rest of the season, the GM role will be filled by Rustin Webster, who was the VP of player personnel. And obviously now all signs point toward possibly Mike Holmgren, who obviously was the head coach out there in Seattle for 8 seasons and got them to a Super Bowl. The speculation is looming large that he will come back in a role similar to the one that Bill Parcells is filling in Miami. And it remains to be seen whether if he is indeed the guy, whether he'll stick with Jim Mora, who is in his first year as the head coach.
Yeah, the fascinating part of this story, and I'm afraid we've only got about 30 seconds or so, is that Mike Holmgren is possibly a Hall of Fame head coach. He was not very good as the GM of the Seahawks when he had that job, and that's why Tim Ruskell got hired. So why do they think it'd be better this time around?
And the other thing to add to that is that Bob Harlan would have hired Mike Holmgren in Green Bay if Holmgren, you know, if he thought Holmgren would do the homework, and that is the film work and with the projector, the whole bit. I mean, will you do the legwork on the personnel side of things? And he never felt that Mike's heart would be in that aspect of the job. Now you make him general manager, and that's what the job essentially is, right?
Yeah, the problem with him the first time around, according to a lot of the people out there, is that he actually tried to do everything by himself, and he was a massive micromanager, and he apparently has learned from his errors the first time around and thinks that he can do a much better job just concentrating solely on football operations and not the head coaching situation.
Dan, thank you very much. We'll talk to you again next week. Stay tuned. The games for Week 13 are up next on Pro Football Weekly. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. This is Wayne Larrabee along with Hub Arkish. It is Week 13 in the NFL this weekend. The Jets and Bills play Thursday night, and per usual, we preview the Sunday and Monday night games in the NFL this weekend. Well, you know, if I could think of anywhere to go as a visitor in this NFL weekend, Pittsburgh would be about the last place I'd want to show up. You see, the Steelers are coming off an overtime loss to arch rival Baltimore last Sunday night, but that's the duty that the Oakland Raiders face. They're going to show up there as visitors, traveling cross-country to take on an angry bunch of defending world champs in the Steel City. The Raiders are 3-8. They were the turkeys in Dallas on Thanksgiving Day. Steelers pushed the Ravens into an extra session at Baltimore without quarterback Ben Roethlisberger, who was held out due to the effects of a concussion, and their best defensive player, Troy Polamalu, who's still questionable with a chronic knee. Make sure you check the status on both Roethlisberger, who very nearly played last week, and Polamalu, who elevates a very good defense into great status if he plays. Regardless whether they play or not, the Steelers should have enough to rebound against a lowly Raider team. The Denver Broncos put the brakes on a four-game losing streak last Thanksgiving night with their victory over the Giants. Now, this week they look to make it 2 in a row, try to keep pace with either the Chargers atop their division, the AFC West, or those embroiled in the AFC wild card chase. Broncos are in Kansas City, where the Chiefs, for the second week in a row, are facing one of the top teams in their division. The Chiefs are buried in San Diego by the Chargers last week, 43-14. Wide receiver Chris Chambers made quite an impression in Kansas City in four games with the Chiefs, 17 catches, 319 yards, three touchdowns. But it would behoove the Chiefs to try and run the ball. Pass blocking against Elvis Dumervil Hub is no way to go through a Sunday afternoon successfully.
You know, when the preseason predictions came out, very few people expected the Chicago Bears to be playing one of these who cares games with 5 weeks left in the season. But the Bears, one of the biggest disappointments in the NFL, having dropped 6 of their last 7, and they are at home against the St. Louis Rams. Now, the Rams have been a feisty group under rookie coach Steve Spagnuolo, but they haven't been able to convert it to a lot of wins. The one edge they get, Steven Jackson having a fantastic year. They're 12th in the run. The Bears just 24th versus the run. But Jackson bothered by a bad back. You've got to keep an eye on his status for this ballgame. The Bears are dead last in the NFL rushing the football, but the Rams just 28th stopping the run. This could be a tonic for what's been ailing that Bears running game. That and the fact that the Rams 2-11 in their last 13 roadies, as much as the Bears have struggled, a little hard to see the Rams pulling the upset here. Detroit goes to Cincinnati and the Bengals. Not only are they one of 7 teams in the last 12 years to sweep their division, now they're reaping the benefits. They got Cleveland last week. They get Detroit this week. And the Lions are trying their game, but they're still not winning a lot of games. And the issue here, Detroit doesn't score a lot of points. They're 25th in the league in points scored, and the Bengals are first in stopping teams from scoring. Add to the fact that the Lions are 31st in turnover takeaway. The Bengals pretty good at 10. Larry Johnson, keep an eye on that. Don't know what the status of Cedric Benson is, but Larry Johnson goes off for a buck 7 in his first game last week as a Bengal. If Benson gets healthy and Johnson can be a 1-2 punch, that makes them potentially that much more dangerous in the playoffs.
The unblemished New Orleans Saints, coming off an impressive Monday night victory over the New England Patriots, head to our nation's capital, where the Redskins are anything but unblemished. Now, despite outspending just about everyone over the last 3 years for top-shelf free agents, the Redskins of Daniel Snyder are 3-8. They had the Eagles down, but could not put them away last week. And this week, they get the best offense in football. There's no way a Washington offense that has generated only 170 points in 11 games can stay with the firepower that New Orleans Saints bring into this game. New Orleans with 369 points, number one in football, 65 points better than the second highest scoring team in the league, the Minnesota Vikings. The Skins have a tough defense. There's no doubt about that. They've given up just 205 points, 10th overall in the NFL, but they just don't have the kind of offense, Hub. Regardless of whether the Saints are firing all cylinders or not, Redskins don't have enough offense to compete with this team.
You know, we've got the Tampa Bay Bucks visiting the Carolina Panthers, and it's such a strange season for the Panthers. It does look like Matt Moore will go at quarterback, not a certainty, but a likelihood, as Jake Delhomme, not because of all the picks, second in the league in interceptions, but he banged up a finger in that game last week, and we're not sure if Delhomme will play again this year. That should be okay for Carolina, though, because this is about the Bucks' woeful offense, particularly 25th in the league throwing the ball against Carolina's pretty stout pass defense, their third defending the pass. And everybody knows that the Panthers can run the football, 5th in the league. The Bucks just 30th, stopping the run. Tampa Bay, Wayne, 1-14 since losing to Carolina in Week 14 of last season. This one looks to be a mismatch, even though the Panthers have struggled. Now, I've also got the San Francisco 49ers visiting the Seattle Seahawks. Don't know what to make of these two ball clubs. San Francisco appears now to be one of those teams that is going to win the games that they should. They're good when they get in with other mediocre teams. Alex Smith is looking a little better each each week at quarterback, particularly now that Michael Crabtree is contributing along with tight end Vernon Davis. But the Seattle Seahawks, they've gotten healthier. They're still not 100%. They're a terrible road team. They're pretty good at home. Jim Mora Jr. is solid at head coach. Forget the rumors about GM. And the real question here is that 12th man in Seattle enough to give them the edge over the San Francisco 49ers?
Well, Hub, the San Diego Chargers continue their roll to another division championship as they head into Cleveland this week. Now, the Chargers have won 7 straight behind the running of LaDainian Tomlinson, who last week moved into the top 10 all-time leading rushers in NFL history. He scored 7 touchdowns in November alone. But with Phillip Rivers having another Pro Bowl type year and tight end Antonio Gates destroying safety coverages, the Chargers don't need LT to carry the mail the way he once did. Only Oakland has scored fewer points in Cleveland's total of 122 in 11 games. Furthermore, the Browns reportedly lost all-pro nose tackle Sean Rogers to a season-ending leg injury. Can you say 8 straight for the Chargers? Stay tuned. Games of significance are detailed next on Pro Football Weekly. This is Wayne Larrivee with Hub Arkish. Some of the top games on the NFL this weekend. Well, the Houston Texans coming off yet another disappointing loss to the Indianapolis Colts take their flickering playoff hopes to Jacksonville, where for all of their troubles, the Jaguars are sitting there at 6-5 and have some control, actually, Hub, over their playoff destiny.
They do. They've got the tiebreaker right now, but they've also got to win at least 3, probably 4 more football games. And the reason you scratch your head a little bit is if you look deeper, you'll find that the Jaguars' 6 wins, none of them are against a team with a winning record. As a matter of fact, half their losses are to teams with losing records. And so the Jaguars have won games they're supposed to. You give them credit for that. David Garrard, when he's good, he's good. But when he's bad, he's been bad. They're not a very good road team. However, they are at home this week against a kind of a desperate Houston team. And you have to ask the question, I think it's fair, did Houston kind of shoot their wad last week? They got out to the big lead on Indianapolis game. I thought they could win. They found a way to lose it. It's definitely a must-win for both of these clubs if they want to continue to harbor playoff hopes.
Meanwhile, the 6-5 Atlanta Falcons play host to the 7-4 Philadelphia Eagles in an important NFC clash with playoff implications draped all over it. Donna McQuillan has our story.
The 7-4 Eagles are taking it on the road this weekend, a trip to the always loud Georgia Dome to face the 6-5 Falcons. The game not only marks the start of the December postseason push, with both teams having playoff aspirations, it is the return of former Atlanta quarterback, now Philly backup QB, Michael Vick.
I'm excited. I never thought my first year being back I would have an opportunity to go back to Atlanta and actually play in that stadium. It's the place where I spent a majority of my career. Being on the opposite side, it's going to be a bit different. You know, it's going to be tough, but at the same time, I'm going to enjoy the moment.
When not playing in Philly's milder version of the football wildcat, Vic is schooling young men against getting involved in dogfighting.
You don't have to fall into that trap. There are other alternatives that you can resort to as far as, you know, your own leisure, your own and activity in the neighborhood. I'm trying to keep our youth, our people from going down the same path that I went down, believing in the same things that I believed in, the perception of our culture at times.
Vic says he's a different person than he was in 2006.
Going through certain experiences, you mature a great deal. And you never know, you know, how much you've matured until you're put in a similar situation that you was in prior. You know, those situations I handled pretty well and pretty much differently than I would have in a couple years ago. So, just a changed man.
The Falcons will again be without Matt Ryan this week. He's still out with an injured toe. Eagles safety Quentin Michael talks about his backup, Chris Redmond.
He's obviously not a rookie. He's been in the league for a while, so he has a good grasp of the offense. He's a very, very, very capable quarterback. You know, he gets the ball out quickly, on time, and in good spots. So he's definitely a good quarterback.
The Falcons running back Michael Turner is out with a reoccurrence of an ankle injury. And don't look for the Eagles running back Brian Westbrook or wide receiver DeSean Jackson, as both of those players are still feeling the effects of concussions. I'm Donna McQuillan for Pro Football Weekly.
Thanks very much, Donna. An interconference clash on Monday night is another contest with playoff consequences both ways. It's the Baltimore Ravens visiting the Green Bay Packers. More in this report from Greg Matzik.
The Green Bay Packers go into their final 5 games of the season with renewed optimism following their Thanksgiving Day massacre of the Detroit Lions, their 3rd win in 12 days. At 7-4, the Packers are in control of one of the 2 wildcard slots in the NFC, and given their remaining schedule comparative to the other NFC playoff contenders, the Packers are in good shape to return to the postseason. Head coach Mike McCarthy.
Well, it just puts us in good shape. You know, we're 7-4. You know, everybody wants to, you know, talk about ifs and buts, but, you know, you are what you are in this league. And but with that, we have 4 days off, chance to recover. We've been banged up as a football team, so hopefully we can get healthy for this five-game gauntlet we're getting ready to run through.
Monday night, they'll face a Baltimore team coming off a 20-17 overtime victory over the Ben Roethlisberger-less Pittsburgh Steelers. With the victory, the Ravens improved to 6-5, but are still fighting for their playoff lives amid the muddy AFC wildcard race. Monday's matchup against the Packers will be the first of three straight games against NFC North opponents, a lineup that also includes the Lions and Bears. Wide receiver Derek Mason knows these next five games are all too important.
You know, as a team, we are in a situation where every game is a must win if we ultimately want to get to where we want to go, and that's the Super Bowl.
But while the Ravens have long been known for their cage-rattling defense, it's the Packers who have risen to the top of the league's defensive ranks, yielding a stingy 281 yards per game. One of the reasons why? Charles Woodson, who in his 12th season has been a dominating presence with 7 interceptions, 2 sacks, and 4 forced fumbles on the season. Woodson and company will have to raise the level of their game another notch in their first real test without pros Aaron Kampman and Al Harris. The Ravens will counter with a punishing run game led by Ray Rice, who's averaging nearly 5 yards per carry, but it's been the passing attack of the Ravens behind second-year quarterback Joe Flacco that has the team balanced as it's ever been on offense. Something's gotta give. It's the Packers and Ravens. Slobberknocker December football on Monday night in Lambeau Field as two teams fight for playoff position in their respective conferences. Let's get nuts. For Pro Football Weekly, I'm Greg Matzik.
All right, thank you very much, Greg. Couple of important division clashes in the spotlight of Pro Football Weekly after these messages. As we resume with our preview of the top games in the NFL, a trio of intra-division games highlight Week 13 in the NFL. The red-hot and Tennessee Titans take their ascending 5-6 mark into Indianapolis, where the unblemished Colts await. Now, this is one of those storybook rides for Jeff Fisher and company. His Titans were buried at 0-6, and now they've won 5 in a row, and Vince Young's rolling at quarterback. And I'll tell you what, a win here at Indianapolis puts them right in the thick of the playoff race in the AFC at 6-6.
Well, and that sixth loss was a loss at home to the Indianapolis Colts on Sunday night heading into a bye week. Then the owner spoke out, said, I want to see Vince Young at quarterback. Jeff Fisher, we never really understood whether there was a debate between coach and owner, but they came back with Vince Young at quarterback. They've won 5 straight since, and it is a great story. To me, an equally good story, Wayne, I still am not sure the Colts are that good. Let me rephrase that. They're a great football team. Are they the best team in the NFL? I don't think so, and I think this is an interesting spot because this isn't just a lucky run. Yeah, the Titans have played some weaker teams, but this is a Titans team playing well enough to finally dent that Colt loss column.
And playing with confidence. The New England Patriots can just about wrap up the AFC East if they get a win in Miami this Sunday. Our preview is authored by Mike Petralia.
For the second time in 3 weeks, the Patriots are getting ready for an AFC East Division rival after a bad loss on national television. Monday night was not as close as the heartbreaker in Indianapolis, but still the 38-17 thrashing by the Saints in the Superdome has raised serious questions about just how good these Patriots are. The 7-4 Pats can all but clinch the AFC East with a win over the 5-6 Dolphins on Sunday at Dolphins Stadium. Still, there are those doubting that these Patriots can reestablish themselves at the top of the AFC without a power running game. Wes Welker, who along with Randy Moss was held in check by an aggressive Saints secondary on Monday, says he's not surprised by the naysayers.
No, I'm not surprised at all. Not with the way we've been playing. You know, we got a lot of things that we need to take care of, and you know, that's the bottom line, and we realize that, and we just got to move forward from it.
But Dolphins linebacker Jason Taylor isn't about to fall into the trap of thinking the Patriots throw too much and don't run.
They have to pass the ball, and we all know that they can do that very well. They have the best quarterback in the league and the top tandem in the league as far as receivers, and a tight end that is very dynamic, so they can do that. So I think they're a very well-balanced team.
Quarterback Tom Brady said his frustration at the end of Monday's game just reminds him what happens when you don't play well.
We've got to use whatever emotions we had at the end of the game and understand that those are the emotions you have when you don't play well, and hopefully we don't feel that way again. We got to move forward to Miami, who's a tough opponent, and I know everyone wants to talk about last week's game, but that was last week's game, and I'm not so concerned with last week's game at this point. I've moved on to Miami, and the mourning period is over. You know, that game's come and gone, and we can't do anything to change it.
The Patriots beat the Dolphins 27-17 in Foxborough back on November 8th. Offensively, the Dolphins figure to throw a different wildcat look at the Pats this time, as they are without star running back Ronnie Brown, out for the year with a foot injury. In New England, I'm Mike Petralia, Pro Football Weekly.
Thanks very much, Mike. The Dallas Cowboys can throw a dagger into the New York Giants this weekend at the Meadowlands. This NFC East Division rivalry is detailed by Bart Pasterna.
Cowboys coach Wade Phillips has his team atop the NFC East with the third best record in the conference heading into this weekend's matchup with the men of the Meadowlands. But it's December, a bugaboo month for the boys in recent history, so trust the coach when he says he's not looking past this exit off the Jersey Turnpike.
Because I don't think the big picture is as important as the immediate picture. The immediate thing right now is getting ready to play this game and play as well as we can play. And that's what, you know, you can't play five games at once. You can only play one. And this one's real important.
Absolutely, for despite the Cowboys' rise up the ladder, it's only a one-game lead over Philly in the division, and the host Giants can climb within one if they sweep the season series. Yes, in mid-September, Big Blue did beat Dallas. Of course, the Giants were a much healthier team back then, and a reality check shows that quarterback Eli Manning's crew was doing some things they're not doing enough of now.
Our defense got some turnovers for us, got us good field position. We moved the ball pretty well at times.
Currently, the Giants are just lucky enough to be moving at all. Manning has more foot woes, but keeps saying he's fine. Running backs Ahmad Bradshaw and Danny Ware are both hurting, leaving the curiously ineffective Brandon Jacobs as the rushing game. And the once-vaunted D is even more dinged up with the placement of linebacker Antonio Pierce on injured reserve. FYI, that unit has allowed an average of nearly 32 points per game over the past six contests. How will they be able to deal with Dallas quarterback Tony Romo and his three-headed running game and those receiving targets like Austin and Witten? Unless they're counting on it being swoon time in December for you, Tony.
No, we don't talk about that stuff. The only thing we can control is our effort today and our commitment to this team and to this place today. And, you know, we've worked very hard this season to continue improving every step of the way, win or lose. You know, we learned, you know, some things from the Giant game. And that's what you're trying to do. When you lose, you learn from it. When you win, you learn from it. And you improve upon it. And that's what this team has been able to do, is put blinders on and continue to go forward.
With a defense, by the way, that hasn't given up more than 21 points in a single game since week two versus the Giants. For Pro Football Weekly, I'm Bart Pasterna.
Thank you very much, Bart. Stay tuned. A potential NFC playoff preview plus the Handicapper's Corner are up next on Pro Football Weekly. The headliner, an in-depth preview of the top attraction on this weekend's NFL card. Division leaders meeting in the desert in a potential postseason preview. It's the 10-1 Minnesota Vikings and the 7-4 Arizona Cardinals. Our headliner previewed by Justin Gard.
The 7-4 Cardinals hosting the 10-1 Vikings Sunday night in Arizona. The Cardinals looking for a bit more distance atop the NFC West. The Vikings looking to stay one game behind the red-hot New Orleans Saints in the NFC standings. For Arizona, Kurt Warner sat out last week with a concussion, but most expect him to play Sunday night, including Vikings linebacker Chad Greenway.
Yeah, obviously he's been in a lot of big ball games, won a lot of big ball games, a lot like the guy we have. You know, he's been in every situation you can think of and seen every blitz that's been thrown at him. You just got to try to rattle his cage a little bit there, you know, get there as quick as possible. And our guys will, I'm sure, will be in a frenzy to get to him. So we're not too concerned with our front. We know they're going to play hard, and hopefully that's going to be enough.
You heard Greenway talk about their guy. Of course, number four, Brett Favre, the 40-year-old, threw three more touchdown passes last week, bringing his total on the year to 24 touchdowns versus just three interceptions. He's been named the NFC's Offensive Player of the Month for the month of November. He did not throw one interception in that month, one of the best months of his career and one of the best seasons of his career. His body began to break down last season at the 11-game mark, but Favre said earlier this week he expects no such problems this season.
Not one throw this year I felt, either after or during the throw, where I was like, whoop, I'm probably as surprised as anyone. Not that Dr. Andrews didn't do a good job, but I was going my whole career without anything. And then all of a sudden, just about every throw bothered me. And then after the surgery, as I continued to get better, there was still occasional pain. And then come find out there's a tear in my rotator cuff. And just coming off of biceps surgery, all, you know, 40 years old, I'm almost looking for That's probably most of the guy. He won't hold up or his arm won't. But it feels great.
1 year ago, Minnesota went to Arizona and won 35-14. The quarterback that day, Tavares Jackson, who threw four touchdown passes and was named NFC Offensive Player of the Week. The Cardinals would go on to the Super Bowl. The Vikings would go on to lose in the first round of the playoffs to the Philadelphia Eagles. In Minneapolis, I'm Justin Gard for Pro Football Weekly.
This is an easy one to talk about, folks. It's going to be an air show. I don't think there's much doubt about that. Really curious to see how much longer Brett Favre can keep up near perfection with the Vikings, and can the Cardinals get rid of the inconsistency and seek some of the Viking-type perfection for themselves?
Our headliner on Sunday night, Minnesota, Arizona could be a wild one in the desert. Let's welcome into Handicapper's Corner with Chuck Esposito, Casino Manager, Race and Sports for the Tropicana, Las Vegas.
And Chuck, I'm going to switch gears a little bit this week because everybody knows the NFL action is on picking winners and beating the spread. But never before, going into Week 13, have there been two 11-0 teams in the NFL. Now, I know there's proposition bets. There's other things you can do. Are there odds out there right now on the chances of one or both of these clubs getting to 16-0?
There absolutely are odds on the board. You can get both these teams right now, either or. You're taking the Colts or the Saints to go undefeated, and you're getting 3-1 for your money. And it seems like a cheap price, maybe, if you look at historically how teams have done it with an opportunity to go undefeated. But this year, these two teams, based on their schedule coming up and as strong as they've looked, they have a legitimate shot. Although the Saints do have the Cowboys later on, and the Colts have a tough test because it's a very tough Tennessee team this weekend.
And I'm curious, Chuck, are there propositions out there anywhere that tell you to pick one or the other as far as which one you think has a better chance?
Well, the Colts look like they'll probably clinch by week 13 or 14. Which you never know if they're going to rest players down the stretch, where in the Saints' case, with the Vikings only having one loss, and that loss being to an AFC team, who knows, the Saints may not clinch until Week 17.
One more question before we let you go this week. This is the first week this year that the NFL flexed out of a Sunday night game. They were supposed to be in Miami. Instead, they're going to the desert. It's going to be Minnesota and Arizona. Does the fact that a game goes primetime, gets higher profile, does that, in your experience, tend to impact the number at all?
It may a little bit. I mean, I think it's a game that's the one game going on at that time. The public's going to focus on that game. And when a game does flex like that to prime time, you know it's a key matchup. You've got the Vikings, who arguably are one of the more popular teams right now, against the NFC representative from the Super Bowl last year, the Cardinals. So very public game, and the Vikings have drawn tremendous as far as the betting public has gone early on.
Great stuff, Chuck. Thank you much. We'll talk to you next week. Stay tuned. The Publisher's Pen is up next on Pro Football Weekly. The Publisher's Pen with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush. Hub?
Well, Wayne, with the New Orleans Saints' complete demolition of the New England Patriots, it is now officially game on. As we mentioned in the Handicapper's Corner, the NFL has never had two 11-0 teams heading into the 13th week of the season. Can either the Indianapolis Colts or the New Orleans Saints or both go undefeated? Certainly it is a possibility. My money still says neither one gets the trick done. But the better question is, who is the best team in the NFL? I watched the Colts get beat everywhere but on the scoreboard by the Patriots a couple weeks ago. Nobody's come close to doing that to the New Orleans Saints. And even though the Vikings have that one blemish on their record, I'm not so sure that they're not as good or better than the rest. Is this the year that the NFC is dominant? I think I would certainly argue that the two best teams in the NFL right now, the New Orleans Saints and the Minnesota Vikings, of course, are from the NFC.
Thanks, Hub. That'll do it for Pro Football Weekly this week. Special thanks to the Chargers, Eagles, and Saints radio networks. The executive coordinating producer and engineer of Pro Football Weekly is Randy Meyer. Pro Football Weekly originates from the studios of Syndication Networks in Chicago, Illinois. For Hub Arkush and the Pro Football Weekly staff, this is Wayne Larrabee. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week on Pro Football Weekly.